Now, welcome to the Sporting Spotlight, of course, brought to us by Air Diffusion Australia, the greatest company for air conditioning here in Australia. Our special guest. Now, before I tell you who he is, Baz, I want you just to listen to this, mate.
Okay.
317 games for Glenelg,
yep.
5 for North Melbourne, 47 for South Adelaide, so 369 games in total. Premiership player at Glenelg, 3 times best and fairest at Glenelg, 2-time All-Australian.
Yep.
So he coached Glenelg to 2 premierships. He played and coached at South Adelaide. He was the Adelaide Crows' inaugural coach, 91 to 94. Got him into a prelim final too in 3 years. You know how we're rebuilding and all that stuff. Don't worry about this, mate. This guy got him in there in 3. He's in 3 Hall of Fames. Glenelg Hall of Fame, SANFL Hall of Fame, and, of course, the big one, Australian Footy Hall of Fame. He also coached the Australian team twice too. So I reckon we're in pretty rare air with this bloke.
Yeah, we are. Well, we are.
And he's not shy about talking about himself either. So anyway, we'd like to welcome Graham Corns, our very special guest. Cornsy, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
That was a bit of a sledge.
Who did you coach the Australian team? All Australian coach.
All Australian coach. Yeah. Well, that's the Australian team, isn't it?
Twice. Yeah, I suppose it is.
Yeah.
But never actually coached hands-on.
Right. Where we're talking about that, you coached in the state of origin. Which is, to me, that's exactly the same as an All-Australian, because I've often wondered what you said, because some of the teams that you coach, mate, were just, you look at them, you go, whoa, hang on a minute. You just could put them in the room and go, right, go out there and win.
They were fantastic
players.
I was a good batch of players. Timing is everything, isn't it? Malcolm Blythe will tell you timing is everything, but at the same time, we'd played and lost a lot of games against Victoria, so it was a...
That's true.
It was really a matter of emphasising the positives of South Australian footy, playing our brand of South Australian footy, matching the aggression and the grittiness of the Victorians.
Yeah.
So Victorians have got a great football culture, you know, but there's a grittiness about them. Well, there was then, you know, it's very similar these days. So they played on heavier grounds, they were probably tougher, so we just had to match them in the toughness of the contest and take advantage of the skills, because we played a more skillful game. Our game plan was probably better, more effective, running handball and running from defence. So
some of those games, mate, they were just unbelievable, weren't they?
The crowds were amazing at Footy Park. So and then probably the last one, 1994, bear in mind the Crows had been in for 3 years by then. That's often regarded as the greatest game ever played. You go back and look at it now, and it's amazing. So, they're great memories.
Is there a chance for State of Origin to come back? I mean, we were just talking before we came on. We missed State of Origin rugby, and it's such a different world for them when they go to play it. Can you see it ever creeping back
in? The problem is, who plays?
Yes.
If it was just South Australia and Victoria, it would be fantastic. Well, I'm not sure South Australia could be that competitive at the moment. But when you've got to consider WA, Tasmania's going to come in. You've got the Queensland. Queensland, a really strong footy state now. New South Wales and Northern Territory. So how do you organise it? I can't see it.
It'd have to be some sort of carnival style.
It failed towards the end of the last century. It failed because the coaches weren't and the clubs didn't want it. I mean, I remember the last time I coached, must have been 95. Coached the last one in 98, but I was invited back to the 1995. I wanted to play. It must have been 1994, because I wanted to play Tony McGuinness and who was maybe Chris McDermott and the club, Bob Hammond and Bill Sanders. I was the Crows coach and the South Australian State of Origin coach, and here they are telling me I can't have these two stars. So
if you were coaching now, coaching today, would you say you can't have them? If you weren't the state coach, you're the Crows coach.
Well, I wouldn't be enthusiastic about it. I would worry so much about injury, you know. And it's such a long season. We played, that game was played on a Tuesday night, 1993, Tuesday night. So we played the weekend, played Tuesday night, then had to front up. And probably one of the reasons why we had such a poor ending to 1994 and why I got the sack.
We all had the sack,
mate. I think your point's really valid, though. We'll move on from it. The fact that there's too many teams. The big rivalry, of course, New South Wales, Queensland in rugby.
I know.
That's the one, whereas here there's now too many teams. So 6 decades, mate, of high-level footy for you. There's not a lot of blokes that do it. And then I was just wondering, as I was doing a bit of research on you this morning, going, the high flyers I could think of, like yourself, Peter Knights, those kind of guys, not many of the high flyers get to 300 games. You went past that. Do you know why?
No, well, I think I just had good genes. Like, I'm resilient. Like, I didn't carry a lot of weight. And I fell heavily a lot of times. The ground's generally soft. And I had a few injuries. Nothing really, really that serious. I had my third game against Port Adelaide, those filthy...
Oh, no. Easy, big fella.
Here we go. We're off.
The semi-final in 19...
Who was it, mate?
Three broken ribs and a compressed lung and a week in hospital. So it was Kevin Salmon, I think, but it wasn't anything dirty or vicious, but I just couldn't breathe. I mean, my whole chest was sloshing up and down, and they didn't know what was wrong, so Curls just said, no, take him off, quarter time, take him off. So I'm lying in Adelaide Oval. Right. The crowd. Then Doug Lloyd comes in with a broken collarbone. Neil Sutherland comes in with a broken collarbone. Three of us off to hospital in an ambulance.
All accidents.
We lost.
Yeah.
You know, you're saying about resilience and in your genes and whatever, and you didn't carry a lot of weight. Michael Tuck was very similar, and he played about 900 a game. He just kept running.
And he played a couple of years of reserves footy too before
played. Some guys just got that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that Tuck ever flew that high, though.
Well,
so it was more the reference about the high flyers. What you said, it's the landing and it's that constant jarring of your body.
I knocked myself out once at Adelaide Oval. Took a mark over David Granger, but he tunnelled me. Sort of lifted his elbow and I bang, fell back. Hit my elbow, hit the ground, my shoulder hurt my shoulder, knocked me out.
Sports again.
Another accident. Another accident.
Another notch on the belt.
You mentioned Neil Curley before. No, a good friend of yours and a really good friend of mine. And then you had some time in North Melbourne with Barassi. Were there any similarities between the Curls and
very
and
similar? Both legacy legatees, because their parent, dad, Barassi's dad was killed in the war. Curls' father was killed, who died as a result of the war. And similar players as ruck rovers, but Curls could ruck. Curls had ruck, but they were ruck rovers. Brass was more a run on ruckman. As a coach, they had similarities, but Curls had the element of compassion about him. He could be tough on you. He could really, really bleed, and he'd scare the living daylights out of you. But he was fair. Barassi. He just savaged players. So I saw Keith Gregg last night on the front bar. And when I went to North Melbourne, Keith Gregg had been appointed captain at Barassi. And before the season started, he just said, I'm not doing this. I'm not being killed. I don't want to. Because Barassi just is so savage with his criticism. You've seen some of the clips that they have. As a Port Adelaide fan, you would like this, Barry. Well, you wouldn't like it, because I was struggling when I got there late in the start of 1960.
Well, both of you and Russell, I mean, that was, to me, that didn't give you an opportunity to show you.
But anyway, so I got there late and I was struggling. Russ was okay. Mm. So Barass took me to lunch and we got on well. People think we didn't, but we got on well. He took me to lunch just to Miss Wood. He said, I think you're intelligent. He said to me, he said, do you think Russell Ebert's intelligent? I said, I'm thinking to myself, what sort of stupid question's that? I said, he runs his own business, he's a good guy, country lad. He said, I don't think he's that intelligent. I said, I was thinking, what am I supposed to say to that?
Exactly. Now he's dumb.
What am I supposed to say to Russell? We became good mates because we were, when Russ came over, Russ and I came over on Thursday mornings, we were living there, but we shared an apartment. Apartments were right next to each, in the same building, opposite Princess Park. So I didn't know what to do. So I went there to be coached by Ron Barassi because he was the doyen of coaches. And I'm getting to the stage where I'm thinking of coaching. But if I said a poor man's Neil Curley, I don't think I'm not being unkind.
They look similar to me. They're both firebrand and whatever, but you just don't know the
Curls and Brass lacked the compassion.
Curls definitely had that.
But when he finished, when he got sick later in life, he was a happy, smiley sort of guy. And he was coaching Sydney when I was still coaching the Crows, so we had a bit of a relationship then. But
what was your travel arrangements to go to North Melbourne? Because we know that Russell used to go over there Thursday and come home.
I moved over. Hmm. But what had happened is we'd been coached by John Nicholls, and it wasn't a great time at Glenelg. John Nicholls was a great player, not a great coach in my opinion. I think the younger guys who he gave chances to might disagree with that, but training was so boring, didn't relate to how the ball should move on a footy field.
Okay, yeah.
No emphasis on developing, enhancing skills, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So when North Melbourne had signed me back in the early 70s, so that they said, look, Ron Brassey said, look, no, Ron Joseph, the chief executive said, look, if you don't come now, you won't come at all, because I was turning 30, turning 31.
Yeah.
But I said, look, I had an overseas holiday planned for December, January. I said, I can't get there till February. He said, nah, you'll be fine. Go for a couple of runs when you're in Switzerland. Or
yeah. So it might be snowing there.
So we went to a place called Andorra, which is in the mountains, and I thought, oh my gosh, talk about altitude training, but I went snow skiing instead. So I got there late. I was behind the eight ball. Played all right in a couple of trial games. Mm-hmm. I kicked 10 goals in one of the trial games, but that was against Canberra. So the first couple of games I was in the forward pocket. Blighty was starring.
Yeah.
But that squad at North Melbourne in 1979, I think it's the greatest collection of football talent ever assembled.
Yeah.
If you took it, state captains, Brownlow medalist, McGarry medalist, Sandover medalist, best and fairest, you will not get a better squad. So if you didn't play well, if you didn't put your selection beyond doubt, there was somebody who needed an opportunity. So, I played okay the first game. The second game, we got beaten at Western Oval. So I got dropped. So I was running around at night. I played my centre half back in the twos under Ray Jordan, the assistant coach, who was.
Oh, yeah, slug.
Oh, he was a prick of a guy. Really nasty.
Yeah.
Hated South Australians, just like we hate Victorians.
I think he might have been a bit worse, though. We don't like Victorians, sporting-wise, but.
Did you play cricket against him?
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't play against him, but he was one of the coaches of the Victorian side when we played.
No.
He was a mean
KG
man.
Played against him. He said he was
But everybody.
Anyway, so
KG.
I was in and out. I played five games, had a couple of good games, but then went back to the twos. And I was starting to get playing as a ruck rover. I was just starting to get into form, and then I got called up to play full forward against Hawthorn in Sydney on a Sunday. First time I'd ever done it on a Sunday, and playing on Kelvin Moore, and we got beaten. I kicked one goal, but didn't. So they called me in on the Monday and said, look, we're going to drop you this week. It's getting towards the end of clearances. It hasn't really worked out for you, because Pam, the mother of Chad and Kane, had moved over. She was pregnant with Chad.
Mm.
So they realised that was some difficulties there. We hadn't really settled. He said, if you want to go back before clearances close, we won't stand in your way. So I thought about it. So I made a decision to go back, and said, so they bought me for $50,000. Sold me back for $25,000.
So I was wondering,
but there's an interesting appendix to this, I guess. So my last game was in the twos for North against St Kilda at Moorabbin, and I played really well. I was just running into form. Phil Baker was playing full forward in the twos, did his knee in the twos. Okay, Phil Baker, snake bone, being high fly. Full
good
forward.
Player. Yeah, he's a good player.
Blighty's playing full forward in the A grade. So showered, come off, played well as a sitting up in the stand, watching the league team. Blighty does his knee. So Phil Baker, and Blighty both did their knees on the same day. Wow. So Ron Joseph's came running up. He said, "You can't go. You can't go back." I said, "Ron,
it's too late."
I said,
"Too late.
What are you committed to come back?"
Yeah.
So Ron Joseph always said, we laughed about it afterwards. He thinks, had I stayed, they might have progressed a bit further. I would have probably settled in. But I came back, and Neil Curley, to his credit, that's why I love him. I went back 1 week, and he put me straight back into the state team. We went to Perth, played against WA, beat them for one of the few times. And so I settled back into Adelaide. I don't regret going. It was a great experience and great friends.
Could have got Ron for another paper bag.
Another paper bag.
sitting up on the stand. Little paper bag.
I was working with Russell Ebert then. It was Ebert, Motley and Ebert. Russ was in, and obviously he's gone on the Thursday, back on the Monday. And at different stages, we started talking about his journey in commuting.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to him at the time, I said, "Mate, how do you reckon Cornsey's going?"
Yeah.
He said, "Mate, these are his words, I think he's getting shafted." He said, "Because he can go. He can go, but they're not giving him a look because he's South Australian." I said, "Well, then, how do you reckon you're going?" And he did, in the end, there was that one final where he didn't get on. He said his zipper got stuck and he couldn't get his jacket undone to get on the ground.
Yeah.
Was he, at that time, so obviously he, and we respect anything that the great man had said.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he one of the most professional footballers you've ever come across?
Absolutely, and I didn't realise till I lived alongside him. So we had a open door arrangement. We'd sort of go in, you wouldn't knock on the door, you just burst in, "How are you going?" It was Friday night, about 8 o'clock, I reckon. One night, 8 o'clock. I was just going to see what Russ and I have. So walked in, lights are out, and they're in bed. He's in bed at 8. And there was nothing sinister about that. But he was in bed at 8, so he got a decent night's sleep. Then he'd get up on a Saturday morning. We had a park opposite, and he'd be out there, working on his skills.
Because he needed to work on his skills.
Oh, yeah. he's a great player.
Fantastic player.
Great, just so sad he's gone, but that was a real eye-opener to me, because I'd go to bed, 9:30, 10:30 maybe.
Yeah.
But he was in bed at 8:30 and had to get that amount of sleep and preparation.
I want to ask you about a couple of players. So talking to Curls when he was here, spent a lot of time with him. Peter Marker was one of the players he always talked about, and he talked about him in this Barry Robren, Russell Ebert, couldn't separate him. And then Peter Marker.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Close.
He said Marker was the only one he thought could ever contain those two.
Oh. Well, he was a great player.
Hmm.
His career ended too early with that dislocated, broken ankle. He was a Rolls Royce. I'm trying to think who he...
Terrific player.
He had a power and a acceleration about him.
That's him.
I can't remember taking much notice of
the contest. So, yeah.
Robin was different. Barry was different. Mm. Peter was different.
Yes. Oh, they were different players, but that was his compliment to him was that he never saw Barry or... He was the only player he saw that could contain them.
Yeah.
So
I never saw Peter as Bashaw up there containing.
Or could go with them.
I think that's a better word. Go with them, great player and powerful. Love the way he moved, Peter.
It was an era of great players.
Unbelievable time.
Oh, unbelievable.
You mentioned Bagshaw, Rick Davies. Phil Carman was the next one down. If he had
Phil Carman
with his temperament, though, dangerous player, almost as dangerous as David Granger and Ray Hayes.
Yeah.
Jim Teal could do some damage too.
Jim Teal, another one. Yeah. Well, that's what we had. We had a mixture of absolute superstars, but we also had that element of look out.
We had Wayne Phillips.
Yeah, but everyone had
a couple, didn't they?
Every club had somebody that could do some damage, no doubt.
Mate, in your playing time and your coaching time, we often hear about the superstars. We've just mentioned some of them.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's those players that just make everyone better, but they don't ever get the accolades they deserve. You could call them the foot soldiers. You could call them what you like. Is there a couple for you? I just like playing with this guy. I really like coaching this guy. Was there a couple that, for you, that you thought, Gee, we're better with them than we would be without them.
Oh, they're most, just on the guys I played with. Well, Butch was one. Yep. Wayne Phillips, he made you stand taller. Bob Tregenza in the 73 grand final.
Brilliant.
Was just an amazing.
Yeah, that
effort.
Was a big game.
If you could get elected to a Hall of Fame on one game,
well,
he deserves to be. He only played, I doubt he played 50 games for Glenelg, and I keep saying he should be in our Hall of Fame because we don't win that 73 grand final without him. So, and then there's guys like, you know, flashed in and out, like Rexy Voigt's a,
what a great man.
A foot shoulder.
Rexy Voigt. Yeah, yeah.
But still working at the club today, by the way.
Is he Rexy, yeah?
Yep. Well, he does volunteer. So,
yep. Brilliant.
Max James, I always thought was a, you know, underrated player at Port Adelaide. Yeah. Ray Huppert's great player.
Voigt.
Peter Voigt, yeah. Mm, well, yeah. He came to Glenelg, actually, the year I went to North Melbourne. He took number 12, but actually graciously gave it back to me when I came home.
I was going to ask you that. That was a very, you just beat me to it.
Yeah, to
yeah. So he did just hand it back.
He did.
Yeah, good man.
I went to South Adelaide later when I was appointed playing coach, Graham Brooksby was number two, wearing number 12. And I thought, I'm not going to ask. I said, are you happy with that number 12? He looked at me, he said, very.
Yeah. It's a solid, you won't be getting it.
He's a big bugger too. He's a big bugger him as well.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that one of the reasons you went to North Melbourne, you were thinking of getting into coaching, you know, when you finished playing, you're getting closer to the end. At what stage do you reckon you'd started thinking, I might start getting into coaching?
I think after the John Nicholls experience, senior players were disappointed with training. Fred Phillips actually started calling extra training sessions in the morning during the week. So I had this, there has to be a better way of training and preparing guys for a footy game, you know. How do you want the ball to move on a football ground? In a perfect world, when you're playing well, how do you want the ball to work? How do you win the ball? When you win the ball, how do you dispose of it? Can you dispose of it effectively? So you had to work on game plan, game style, but then you had to work on your skills. Then you had to work on the skills under pressure, so you had to put guys. So I'm thinking all of this sort of stuff. But it wasn't until John Halbert wasn't reappointed at Glenelg, 1980, at the end of 1982, because John Cale, the rumour was John Cale was coming to Glenelg. John Halbert wasn't reappointed, he went to Sturt. But John Halbert was going to be appointed. John Cale, we're going to get John Cale. And so, that was pretty exciting. So I went on a holiday, I was driving to my brothers live in Bowen Heads. So driving to Victoria, and the news comes on the radio that John Cale's been appointed coach at Collingwood.
Yeah.
So bear in mind, I'm 34, 35. You know, so I rang Harry Kern. I said, Harry, if we're looking for a coach, I'd like to be considered. Mm. He said, okay. I thought he said, come in at 4:30 on Monday. Okay, so I get in at 4:30 and I'm talking to Bob Campbell and Harry Kernahan. And they're not hearing me, you know, and I'm not cutting through, and I'm thinking this isn't going that well. So anyway, I finished, and as we're walking out, Bob Campbell said, do you realise you're half an hour late? I said, well, no, I was only here at 4:30. He said, no, the appointment was for 4 o'clock. I said, oh, God. Anyway, gosh. So they appointed Graham Campbell, and I stayed for the first meeting, and Graham was enthusiastic, and I went, this could be good, you know. But then the next day, Malcolm Whitford rang me from South Adelaide and said, would you consider coaching us at South Adelaide? So it was an easy transition.
You went playing coach.
I was playing coach, yeah.
Yeah.
Playing coach.
How'd you try to do that today?
I had Gary Bracegirdle was my runner, so he was sort of beside me pretty much the whole time. The hard part was leaving South Adelaide when Glenelg came 2 years later and offered to me to go back. And then...
Hard but easy, Graham, in a sense.
Well, no, it was hard because they were great guys and we had a great relationship. The club had struggled. They had an arrangement with their players. They'd only play 20 cents in the dollar or 30 cents in the dollar. So
yeah.
So I spoke to Curls. I said, what do I do? Because he'd moved clubs. He said, in the end, you've got to do what's best for you personally and your family. Glenelg's where your heart is. You know, that's where your roots are. So I went back.
Yeah. Worked out all right. A couple of premierships.
Yeah, worked out okay.
No pressure.
Okay. can we move on? Can we move on here? I want to move on to 1990.
Well, I do. We'll get there. I just want to get this question in before we get right, there, because I there. Know where you're going. That'll be the end of the interview. Once you get there. I hear a lot of coaches today compare war to footy.
Yeah.
You've served in Vietnam, mate.
Yeah.
And nothing but admiration for that. You've coached. Did you ever use the analogies?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. But it's not... The analogy is the relationship between teammates and soldiers.
So camaraderie.
Camaraderie.
Yeah.
Not everyone in the army is your mate.
No.
I mean, there's some real dickheads in the army.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you see evidence of that. But the ones you have a relationship with... It's a lifelong association.
Exactly,
you know,
is.
It doesn't matter where you are. Every Anzac Day, because our unit, 7th Battalion, was based at Holsworthy. It was raised in Sydney. So most of the guys I serve with are in Sydney. But Anzac Day, I'll always get a phone call. The night before, I'll always get a phone call from the guys I serve with. And a couple of the guys here in Adelaide, that we've got a good mate in Port Lincoln that I serve with. So it's the relationship between men.
Yes.
And I don't want to sound sexist, but it was the relationship between men that is the common bond. You talk about mateship, courage, you know, sacrifice.
Yeah.
All those things are related, except you don't make the ultimate sacrifice in footy. You sacrifice, you know, limbs and muscles, but you don't make the ultimate sacrifice. But it's... And I've been asked to speak since, and Mark Williams asked me to come and speak to Port Adelaide before their Anzac Day game.
Yes.
And Alistair Clarkson asked me to speak to the guys at North Melbourne on Zoom. And Phil Walsh asked me to come down and speak to the guys. So I often talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, and I say, the thing is, soldiers aren't normal guys. Been thrust into, and the thing I do say to the guys when I talk to them, I said, you would make great soldiers. Footballers, you know, I remember the First World War, the whole 18, our first 18 at St. Peter's College, all enlisted straight away. Brave men, decorated. We're sitting there talking to a group of footballers, I know you would make great soldiers. Yeah. You would be great soldiers. And on Anzac Day, that seems to resonate.
Hmm.
So, yes, there's a decided similarity.
I want to know, you're in the infantry.
Yeah.
My experience in the Nasho, when I got called up, you had a choice after your training.
Yeah.
So you could pick three...
Don't go there.
Because I was lucky. I had a brother who was in before me, and he said to me, he told me to pick artillery. That's what he said, because you become a 9-mile sniper. Yeah. I can shoot you, but you can't shoot me.
Yeah.
That's what they. But you get three choices.
Yeah.
Did you have three choices?
It's a sad story, Barry. when I got called up, we go to Pakapanyu.
Yep, went to Paka.
So in the first couple of weeks of Pakapanyu, you can apply for officer training. An officer training course, which you have to go and do all the tests for, and if you get selected, you go off to a place called Skyville in New South Wales, in the foothills of the Blue Mountains. So I applied for it, and I got selected to go to Skyville. It's a 6-month course, which takes them 12 months to do a port, so you come out as a second lieutenant. A really intense, high-pressure course, and only about half the guys graduate. So I did So halfway through the course, they're sitting down and they ask you to nominate which corps you'd like to go if you don't graduate from Skyville.
Yeah.
If you graduate from Skyville, you're almost always assured of getting your choice of corps.
Whichever way you want.
So we're sitting down and we weren't taking it seriously. About four or five of us said, where would you go if we didn't graduate? and say, well, why wouldn't we go to Vietnam where you get you don't pay tax, you get a combat allowance,
yeah, terrific,
you get a war service loan.
Yes. Yeah.
Seven Battalion's going. So five of us put down Seven Battalion, not thinking. So the week before graduation comes, and I'm not sure because I'd stuffed up a navigation exercise. I'd lost my rifle on another luckily found it, went back and got it, but word got back to the guys controlling that
that's not good.
That I'd left my rifle behind, but anyway.
Moderately
I
important.
I don't like that.
The trouble is I was carrying the radio. Anyway, we'd stopped to have a rest on the radio. It was really bloody heavy. And so off we went. It was in the Blue Mountains. We're climbing up. Where's my rifle?
Sorry, and Barass was asking you before about whether Russell was smart. Okay.
I was with a guy called Les Bogue. He said, oh, my God, Les was a real warrior. I said, oh, my God, back again. So we found it. But we stuffed up navigation. We arrived at this point. We're supposed to be Zero Alpha. This is Delta Bravo. I can't remember what the call sign was. We're at point A. Delta Bravo, can you see me? negative. Negative. Well, you're not there.
Oh, I'm having a good day.
So I lost my rival.
Yeah. So
got lost.
Anyway.
Infantry, here I come.
So the week before graduation, we'd been fitted for our uniforms and everyone had done the marching out parade. The drill that we did was amazing, you know, the marching and the drill, that was unbelievable. But I got called into the COs and said, no, we're cutting you. And I realised why. I was immature. Stuffed up on the route march, you know. We did an 11-day exercise, finished at midnight. The end of the 11-day exercise was a 7-kilometre withdrawal under fire. Then we got on a truck driving up there, and they turned off a fire track. It's midnight, and all of a sudden, we're in an ambush because they have blanks and explosions going off. Yeah. So we sort that out. So it's 12:30, 1 o'clock in the middle of the night, jet black, pitch black, and they go off and get orders. And said, okay, guys, this is where we are, got the map, and over here's breakfast, and it's 32 kilometres up and down. So halfway through that, I'm thinking, fuck this, can I say that?
Yeah, go for it, mate.
So I'm just stumbling and stuttering, and I thought, this fucking place, I'm going the CO's right behind me, and I deserved it. So to cut a long story short, I got my choice of going to 7 Battalion. And then we had 10 months of intense training there, so fair to say. And then I went to Vietnam,
which is the worst. Pay tax. did you take your rifle with you?
Glad I
might have been. Could have needed it.
I was a trained mortar man, which was one of those specialist skills. And then I was... Got promoted to the command post where you're working out all the bearings for the tubes, because they've got sights on the tubes and someone's got to calculate that. But then I kept getting into trouble. I just kept being, got charged for disobeying a command, got put in the detention, the military prison for 7 days.
Oh,
got out of that. Oh, you did too.
I got 6 charges in one night.
Well, I was...
Misunderstanding.
I was ripped off. And anyway, so I got out and I came back, and then within a week later I got charged again for refusing to pick up cigarette butts in a fire support base. And that's when they transferred me out to a rifle battalion, which was... That wasn't fun. That wasn't fun.
Wow.
The mortar platoon was a pretty easy gig for an infantry... If you're in an infantry battalion, but... Not in a rifle company.
Amazing. I'm glad I asked you that question. When I was reading up this morning and I knew that you had gone to Vietnam,
yeah.
But I saw infantry and I thought, I can't see Graham going in. Choices, infantry, right, I want infantry. I want to be over there right up the front.
It was just stupid. But strange, because I was in trouble. I was always in trouble and I thought, and the CEO, when the last charge he heard me on, he said, he looked, I'm standing there, attention, no belt, no hat. And he said, no, you again, Private Corns.
Good to see you.
Got you, gun.
Okay, you're disobeying a command here for refusing to be got said. You're bullying a Lance Corporal. I'm just a private. He said, you're nothing but a bully, Private Corns. He said, you want to pick on somebody? Pick on me. We'll go out the back of the tent now. You can have it out with me if you want to.
That's the boys.
And I'm thinking, he's a little fat guy. He's a colonel.
Yeah.
And he's challenging me to... I'm thinking,
don't do it.
What's going on here? I'm thinking, no, he must be a Golden Gloves boxer.
Exactly.
He's got a couple of boys out the back.
He said, do you want to do that? My mind's racing. No, sir. So within half an hour, I was in his Bell helicopter. Chop it out to a landing zone in the middle of the jungle, and all these guys come racing out with black camouflage on. I've come out of the fire support base, and I'm the number two on a machine gun. Then within a day, the machine gun has had an accidental discharge, and he's gone back to camp. I've had to take over the machine gun. Haven't really trained as a machine gunner. And that's the one they shoot first.
Yeah. Right. He's the one they're after.
The reasoning behind it was a machine gun's harder to lose than a rifle.
And it's three times as heavy, though. Plus, you've got all the belts of ammunition.
Oh, yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, I'm glad I did too.
So, do you want to get into 1990?
I just want to go, I do. I want to start there because
it's going to be chilly here, but okay.
It was a tumultuous time for footy in SA.
Yeah.
You stole the licence from Port Adelaide.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I just want to know, mate, how tough it was for you as the coach to just walk into an AFL, here we go. Graham, here's your squad, away you go. You got nothing, really.
I never saw it as tough. When I look back and we didn't have balls.
Yeah.
So I had to go and pinch some from the under-18s because all those things were stored in Footy Park. So we didn't. But you start training. We had a training program. Trevor Jakes was assistant coach. Michael Taylor was assistant. And the guys loved Michael Taylor. So
great guy.
He was a great. Yeah. He was a great conduit. We had a guy called Leon Holm who was doing our strength and conditioning, and he's much underrated. He's passed away now, unfortunately. But trained Dean Lucan. I'd done a study tour to America with some of the big sporting teams over there, and they all had Olympic weightlifting coaches to doing their plyometrics and their strength. So he was great. No, look, you set a program, but the guys rock up. Footballers are great.
They would have been keen as well. They would have been as keen as mustard.
And they worked harder. They worked 13. But Leon organised training. There's no gym. He found this little bar at the
northern,
and then he had and one of them universal machines that the umpires were, and he rotated squads of guys through. So we're doing 13 days out of 14. The guys were great. Yeah. I don't look back for 1 minute and think, geez, that was hard.
So Tasmania are coming in.
Yeah.
Hopefully, what advice would you give Brendan Gale if he picked up the phone and rang you today and said, what's ahead of me? What's a couple of things I need to be aware of?
He wouldn't know. The thing we had to do first was develop a team spirit and a team culture. The guys, we had guys from nine different clubs, maybe 10 was at that stage, because they hadn't amalgamated, had they? Yeah. So they kept it in their own little group. So they had to... I laid it down quickly. They had to be bigger, stronger, fitter, faster, and more skillful. And they had to be strong psychologically, because it's a psychological game. You've got to be strong mentally. And we test them with that by some of the things we do on the train, like the 110 hundreds, which you might have heard of.
The end of me.
Sorry?
That's the end of me. I'm gone.
No, you wouldn't be gone. But they worked through. We worked up to it slowly, but... Robert Walls had set the test, like at Carlton, they had to do 100 hundreds, they had to do it in 18 seconds, and they had 42 seconds to rest to do it again. So we'll do it in 17 seconds. You'll only have 35 second rest, so we'll do it in a 52 second turn, and we'll do 110.
So we're better.
So we, so then you can see. So
psychologically, you're better.
So they responded. I thought they responded really well, you know. And I don't. The thing is, I don't think those guys got the credit. They didn't have contracts. A couple of them did, but most of them didn't.
We can finish up whenever you want.
So the flight was in
enough recognition.
Well, and then we played, had a couple of trial games. Then we played pre-season games, won a couple. And we had that trial game against Essendon, 42,000 people. So they're off and running. Guys were contracted. Mark Bickley was the last one on. He was always going to be dropped off, but he kept hanging in there. And we won our first game against Hawthorn.
Which was an amazing game, an amazing night. Yeah. I was on the boundary line that night, Gorsy.
I know.
And I remember going back up to the people upstairs, the callers, saying, if anybody ever says to you that AFL footballers are soft, you tell them they're crazy. No, because that was the bump on McDermott and Brereton and someone else.
Deer. I think it was Deer.
Hit on the wing.
Was it Deer?
Can't remember who it was, mate, but the noise that bump made... just in front of me.
Well, there's a funny story about that. You're too cold to hear it?
No, go for it.
So Dermot Brereton is reported for knocking Chris McDermott out.
Yep.
Okay. Neil Curley is our football manager. Can you imagine Curls? He wanted to be a coach.
Yep.
He wanted to be a coach. So I'm allowed to swear, aren't I?
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So Monday, Dermot Brereton's been reported. In the Adco hut, Curls and I had an office next door to each other. The walls were thin, so you could hear everything going on. And the reception, Neil Curley, there's, what was the guy's name? John Hook, I'm thinking it was from Hawthorn. There's a John Hook on the phone. And I'm listening to Curls. You can go and get fucked. That thug ruined our captain's, one of the best night our captain's going to have. So what John Hooken rang up and said, Neil, what we normally do in these situations when he goes up in front of the tribunal to give evidence, he just softens it like it was like an accident. So that's what John Hooken said. You can go and get.
He's told me this story. Those exact words.
That thug. See, but see, Curls hated Hawthorn because we had signed Darren Jarman before we had AFL contracts, signed to a heads of agreement. Hawthorn had raced in and said, well, that's not a contract. Yeah, we signed our contract, ripped up the heads of agreement, and took him out of town. So because they'd shaken hands, Curls never got over that.
Yeah.
But this is... Because when we complained about that, their club president said, you're in the big boys. You're in the big league now, boys.
Oh, yeah.
You're
in the big league now, son.
You're in the big league now. So that was...
They used to like using that line, the Vicks, didn't they? They did. They're still using it today.
Anyway.
Very quickly, you accelerate into a prelim final.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the league now, if you can get from A to B pretty quick, they go, amazing. But you go within 93, you're in a prelim final, which would be unheard of now. There's no way Tasmania starting up. They're going to be in a prelim final in a couple of years.
I just think they.
Oh yeah.
They start with a defeatist attitude. And I just the problem. It's interesting. It's an interesting because we always thought we could win most of our home games. Psychologically. Why can't we win our home games?
Yes.
State of origin, why can't we not? And then we'd win a home game. Then we go to Moorabbin. Tony Lockett, Nicky Windmar, Robert Harvey, we get 20, we get smashed. We go to Geelong, you know, Billy Brownless, Gary Ablin, we get smashed down there. But we come home the next week. So that was tough, the up and down. Getting used to travel, that was tough. But why can't you win more games than you lose? Why can't you? You know, when you go down to Tassie, you've got to... advantage. Yeah. So by the third year, we'd won 10 games in our first year, 11 games in our second. And we did, the only acceptable outcome in year three was playing finals.
Yeah.
And to do that, we had to win at least 12 games, and we worked out we could do that. and they came down to the last game against Collingwood, and we beat them. So we got slipped into fifth spot.
Remember it well.
Played Hawthorn in the first final, beat them. And then played Carlton in the second one at Waverley, and that we kicked 8 goals, 21. Should have gone straight into the grand final. And then we won't talk about the week after in the prelim final.
Let's not do it. Okay,
we'll drop that one.
We'll move on quickly then.
We'll drop that one.
Could you coach again now? Would you coach again now?
No. Although I was asked to coach the state team a few years ago when no one wanted to do it. And they said, look, can you help? We'll give you young assistants. We'll give you all the facilities you want. We couldn't use Adelaide Oval. So the first year we played WA, and playing WA in Western Australia can be difficult, and it wasn't. We got beaten. But in the second year, I knew what we'd done wrong again. So the second year, we had good youngest. Heath Uni was one of the assistants. And we had Stephen Schwert as our sports scientist. We treated it as though they were an AFL club, and we played Victoria at Adelaide Oval and beat them. But it was, go and watch Glenelg train occasionally, and they're doing what they should be doing. How does the ball move? And I think, God, this is. Plus, footballers are different these days. Young men are different. The youth of today are so different. I couldn't relate to them. I mean, I don't have the. It's all about relationships. I'm not sure I would. I wasn't Neil Curley or Ron Barassi, but I don't think I'd have the same relationships that are required, or the same compassion, because the youth of today are very entitled. I don't think I could tolerate that. So could I? You might be able to coach a basketball team, Phil, but I don't think I could coach a footy team.
There was a guy, you're talking about the youth of today, there was a classic case for you. Playing a semi-final on the weekend, I'm coaching, and my gun fast bowler. I said to him, go into that net there and let him have a few. Yeah. Well, he goes, I can't. I said, what are you doing? What's your problem? He said, I've got to go home. Sorry? You've got to do what? He said, I've got to go home. Said, what? You got a problem? Is there a problem? I think there's a problem. Is there a problem at home? He goes, no, it's my turn to do tea and the dishes. Oh, well, off you go then.
Oh, look.
Well, off you go. His dad rang me the next day and wanted to know why he wasn't picked in the team.
Doing the dishes.
Well, I can't have him halfway through his over going off and doing the lawns.
Having said all that, we wouldn't have wanted the lives of our grandmothers and mothers, who they lived in a very male-dominated era. Mm. So, it's all for inclusion and equality. But sometimes you've got to lay it down. Blisters! Blisters!
Yeah, good luck with that.
We can't let you go, mate, because we can't let you go without talking about your golf.
He's just come off the course. He's just come off at the Glenelg Golf Club.
And I know that people can see that this is a magnificent golf course. This is one of the great golf courses. The views you get from anywhere you go on this course are just absolutely brilliant. Now, you had a hit today, obviously. Yeah. You're here. How's you going?
I'm not a very good golfer.
Well, you play.
Occasionally, I had.
You're only playing days that end in Y.
I had 31 points, but my handicap today was too high for somebody of my natural ability.
Join the club.
I don't know why I could play footy, but I could hit a cricket ball, but I wasn't a great cricketer. I could hit it. I'm not a great tennis player. I'm not a great basketball player.
Tough game, Graham. The golf is such a tough game.
I started too late.
You did remember to take your clubs with you, didn't you?
Yeah.
I did. I've forgotten a couple of times.
A follow on from the rifle, that's all I'm thinking.
I rocked up to the golf club, pull up in the car park, and go get into the back. Oh no!
This is increasingly difficult for you. Shouldn't talk about yourself for me, because people often say to me, "Do you know Cornsey?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah." So what's he like? I said, "He's a ripping bloke." Yeah. You make this really difficult. I said, "He's highly intelligent. Fun to be around. He's great company. He's a good talker." Well, he's left his rifle behind. He's left his golf clubs in the car. There is that perception, though. And do you reckon it's created across the journey where Cornsey's a little bit arrogant? And people form an opinion about coaches and players and people. We do it all wrong without getting to know them.
over the six decades, mate, has it shifted at all for you?
Seems to have shifted a little bit in my latter years.
Yeah.
When I was playing footy, I can swear, can't I?
Yeah.
So as a player, corned you, puffed her.
Yeah.
Poor you, puffed her.
The fur coat probably didn't help with it.
Well, probably
at the time.
No. And maybe the red leather pants just capped it off.
Just threw them off a little bit.
But I loved that fur coat. It was just... It was
mate, I wouldn't have wore a crabbin.
I took it. That holiday in Europe, I took it there. Nobody looked twice.
You were ahead of your time.
In Europe, I can imagine. Yeah.
I remember watching.
But Albert?
And I'm playing at Albert. So I'm playing the forward pocket. Fred Phillips is playing on Ron Elloway.
Ronnie Elloway, yeah.
And in the pocket. Oh, you puffed her. Oh, you puffed her.
Yeah, sorry for yelling that out.
That was Barry.
Sorry, mate.
I said, Fred, are they talking to you? He said, no. And Ron Elloway said, they're talking to both of you. Now get in front of me.
Ronnie Elloway. Oh, my God.
That was the days. Lately, it's more like a corny, there's a good natured... There's a good natured tone in the recognition compared to the old days when, I used to go and fight guys. They'd pass, if they, abuse you. One guy's really smart. If I pass you, Don Jetty Road, you're walking down the street and he's in the car, open window, called out, abusive names, but then he got stuck in the traffic lights. So I'm starting to catch up with him. So what did you say, mate? Yeah.
Should run that by me again next year.
Bang. And I said, do you want to go around the corner? He said, no.
I didn't mean it that much.
Remember that commanding officer, mate, and try to get you around the back, don't you? You've got to be careful where you're going.
I still to this day, I was speaking to one of the platoon commanders just recently and told him the story. He said, no, he wouldn't have done that. He would have been too much. I tell you, he invited me around the back to have a fight with him. And the reason I said no, because I just assumed he was a Golden Gloves boxer.
Some hard bugger, yeah.
He's a colonel, mate, with a battalion behind the tent. That's what he is.
Strangely enough, for all the trouble I got in the army, a guy stopped me the other day and said, I knew Doug Gibbons, your platoon commander in Darwin, and he did a sportsman's night one night, and your name came up. And he said, well, Graham Corns is one of the best soldiers I ever led. I said, he couldn't have said that. He could not have said that.
Well, so I was.
Because there was another disobeyed commander. He didn't charge me. We're on patrol on this road outside of a village. And we had to go down. We had to disperse on the other side of the road because all these kids come through. And the kids used to try and get you for lollies out of our ration packs. And this little kid came up. Asking, I was about to give him one of the lollies out of it because they have lollies in the ration pack. And Doug Gibbons said, "Don't do it, Private Corns. Don't do it." But I did it anyway. I gave this little kid a lolly. He said, "Okay, put yourself on report." But he didn't follow through by moving back to camp. So I thought, how could he say? How could he be so complimentary about me as a soldier when I was always in so much trouble? Like Alan Aldenhoven, my great mate. He was a great soldier. Should have stayed in the army. The boxer, Alan Aldenhoven. If you know. Anyway, it was nice to hear, but I thought he.
Yeah. Thanks anyway.
Just to be nice.
We need to let you go. You're off the course, mate. I forgot to mention too. OAM. Congratulations on that one.
Yes, absolutely.
So there's not much left to accomplish, really. Premierships.
Maybe I can stay married, perhaps.
Maybe a couple of birdies.
That's a conversation for another time. Can't be good at everything. Graham Corns, our special guest.
You're laughing.
I think it's worth the conversation.
No, it's not. It's just not worth the conversation. That's what it is.
Anyway, it's been fun, guys. Thanks.
Great to see you, mate. Good to see you, mate. Thanks for joining us today, mate. And thanks to the Glenelg Golf Club, too, as well.
Looked after us really well, mate.
Looked after us well.
No, I'm there. Get up, mate. Like, share, subscribe. That really helps us out. Don't worry about what that says. Like, share, subscribe.